This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Newell will be back next week. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be sitting in on this Friday with the amazing weather that we're going to have this weekend, and even better weather next week with a real fall cold front coming in on Tuesday. And, you know, it's going to be gumbo weather, which I've never really understood that. I get it that people like hot food when it's colder outside, but there's never been a bad day for gumbo as far as I'm concerned. Now, you don't want to leave the stove running and heating up the house when it's 100 degrees outside. I understand that. But tomorrow is National Gumbo Day, so definitely a day to have gumbo. People have been texting us for the entire program about their favorite gumbos, whether it's chicken and sausage, whether it's seafood, whether it has okra or doesn't have okra, whether it's got rice and or potato salad. One person just texted in and says, "You're not talking about the most important thing when it comes to gumbo. The roux." You know, you're absolutely right. And Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser did reference that. For me, the darker the roux, the better, the more flavor it adds to the entire gumbo experience. But I guess that some people like a more blonde roux, but for me, it's brunette all the way. The Saints are taking on the Buccaneers Sunday at noon in the Superdome, and calling that game, like all of the games here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network and WWL, is the voice of your New Orleans Saints, Mike Haas. Mike, how you doing on this Friday?
Well, I'm doing fine, and I know we're going to be talking some Saints, but I gotta chime in. So
every guest I've had this show wants to talk about gumbo before. All right, go ahead.
Right. I will eat gumbo all the time, but I'm a big gumbo cook, and I am not cooking gumbo until it's colder. Not a cool front. It's got to be colder. It's about cooking. I am turkey and andouille. Andouille's got to be from La Place. You pick your place, and I kind of agree with you from a roux standpoint. Just remember, the darker your roux, the less viscosity that you have in the roux, and so you don't have that thickening agent. So you want to find the fine line between a thicker roux, which I like, a thicker gumbo, or maybe a thinner roux that might be darker. So
it's about the viscosity. Okay.
Yeah, it is for me.
All right, so maybe a light brunette or a dark blonde.
Right, and then, you know, sometimes, here's what I do. If my roux is, thick like I like it, but it's not the right color, add a little kitchen bouquet, boom, your gumbo is the perfect color.
The chef's little helper, the kitchen bouquet, makes it look right but still have the viscosity that you're aiming for. I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. All right. And you're using turkey instead of chicken, and you're getting that andouille specifically from La Place.
Oh yeah, you got to get your andouille from La Place. I don't like to get there's a battleground in La Place on andouille, and I don't like to. It gets fierce, so I don't want to get too deep into it.
Competition is good for our bellies, no doubt about it. There, all right, rice, potato salad, both.
You know, I'm new to the potato salad thing. My wife loves it. I'm rice typically. When I'm in the river parishes, I will do the potato salad because that's what they do, and I like it. And there's another thickening kind of agent to it. But typically I'm rice, but I'm certainly not opposed at all to the potato salad.
All right, that increases the viscosity just to keep that, that thread going through things. All right, and hot sauce?
Only if it needs it. If I'm putting hot sauce in it, it means that maybe it hasn't gotten the flavoring that I typically want. You shouldn't have to. This is a personal opinion, but if you like it like that, that's fine. You know, Tabasco or Crystal, your choice. But I'm like, if I put a lot of hot sauce in it, then I messed up my gumbo somewhere.
To you, when it comes to gumbo, hot sauce is like ketchup. It's just used to cover the flavor. All right. I do like a little Louisiana or Crystal. I love Tabasco, but not in my gumbo. So there is that. All right, I'm glad we got that out of the way. Now that everyone's starving to death, let's talk about the Saints.
Yeah. Although, can we keep talking about the gumbo? This has been much more fun.
Yeah, the Saints have not been a good gumbo the last three games, no doubt about that. And so many question marks about what ingredients are even available to throw into the Saints gumbo for this Sunday against the Buccaneers. One thing we do know is that there's going to be a brand new quarterback who's never started a game in the NFL or for the New Orleans Saints under center on Sunday.
We do, Spencer Rattler. And so I was just talking to Doug Thornton, the executive vice president here in the hallway. He actually played quarterback at Louisiana Tech. And, you know, the thing is, we, you know, the Saints and fans, we don't know. But guess what? Neither does Tampa. They don't know what they have in Spencer Rattler. And so, you know, everybody's got to face a rookie at some point. Tampa Bay, this will be their third rookie they have faced already this year in six games with Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix. So they're somewhat used to it. It's not a slight, I don't think at all, to Jay Kaner. I think they've both been very, competitive. I think the difference is that you've had a week to prepare, whereas Spencer was your emergency third and when you had Carr in, and Haner was your number two because he felt like Derek went down during the game. Jake is probably the guy that you would turn to. He's been in
to keep that game plan going that was made right for Carr, yeah.
But if you've got a week to prepare, now you're picking, and obviously what they feel is the best guy that gives them the best chance of winning. There are not miles between Jay Haner and Spencer Rattler. They are very, very both competitive, very similar, but they just felt like Spencer gave them the best chance to win
in this game. And, you know, I think it's also, at least from the fan perspective, and I know the coaches don't put a whole lot of stock in what fans think about personnel decisions and things like that, but from a fan perspective, we've seen this wave of excitement about Spencer Rattler, and I think that it may be related to the fact that we're seeing other mobile rookies have a lot of success across the league this year, and particularly when you look at what's happening in Washington with Jaden Daniels, but there are other examples. I think that there's just a sense that, hey, could we have that guy too, this rookie who can run and who can get out of the pocket and make things happen? Maybe, just maybe, this is a, particularly with the banged up offensive line, maybe this is an opportunity for the Saints to make something happen.
Yeah, I would say there's some validity to that, especially when we see how mobile quarterbacks have done against the Saints defense, right? We've unfortunately seen that side of it, and it's been, you know, a long, long time since you've really had a quarterback back there that can have those kind of wheels. Now, Jameis could run, didn't really want to, so that was different. So, let's remember, you go to any NFL city where things are not going well, we love the backup. We love number two. And in this city, right or wrong, people's opinions are people's opinions, and they can have them. You're either a pro Derek Carr or an anti Derek Carr. There are very few people in the middle, right? And so that's just kind of the way it is. For whatever reason, that's their choice. And so you put all those things together, that's what you got. You got an excitement about a Spencer Rattler who can move in the pocket, has that ability. The funny thing is kind of really they spent Irvine in training camp trying to get him kind of out of that mode, get him out of not being your first thought process to pull it down and run. We know you can do that, right? You stay in that pocket, that half a beat more, get the ball out of your hands faster. That was a big deal in Irvine for him. But really, we know you can run. Let's see how we can do in this system, passing the football, because in this system, as Derek has said, the first four or five steps by the quarterback, the defense shouldn't know whether it's a run or a pass. It's the zone, running wide option. So we'll see. He has not had a ton of snaps. He's been your emergency third quarterback. He has not had a ton of snaps until this week since Irvine. And so there's a lot there to get done this week. And he hasn't been handing off to Taysom, and he hasn't really been handing off to Alvin. He hasn't been doing a lot of the stuff because all those guys are hurt.
Yeah, and so I hope folks temper their excitement, because there's a lot more going on with the Saints right now than just an injury to Derek Carr at quarterback and just the play of Derek Carr at quarterback. So much else goes into it. But I will tell you, I am glad to see that at least there is some kind of renewed sense of enthusiasm and excitement in the Houdat Nation that maybe, just maybe, Spencer Rattler can be a difference maker and bring a new spark to this team. And I'm hopeful that that will be the case.
You know, me too as well, just to get that, because you want the crowd. The crowd's going to be important on Sunday, very important. This Tampa offense, we've spent the entirety of this conversation talking about the Saints offense, and to me, really, I feel the outcome of this game is going to be decided on how well the Saints defense does against Tampa's offense, because that is, you know, if Tampa continues what they're doing, and they've been playing really, really good football, and they're healthy, and they're coming in rested. Now, they've had their hurricane to deal with. God bless them on that and what they've had to deal with, and we're all in that. We understand those concerns.
Yeah, been there over and over, sadly. Yeah.
Right, Dave, but they've been here practicing. And they played, you know, a Thursday ago against Atlanta. Man, they're healthy. They're playing well. So I feel like this Saints defense has to be the one to dictate the action. It just can't be, and we held them to 20-some points. I think this defense is going to need a pick six, a turnover, score themselves. It cannot be a track meet, right? It cannot, right. Even though the Saints are averaging 28 points and the Buccaneers are averaging 25, you know, a lot that Saints 28 is based on the first two games. And so a track meet, in my estimation, is not going to behoove of the Saints, because not sure if they can keep pace with a Buccaneer offense that is playing so well.
Well, what we've seen a pattern in these three losses the Saints have had, in that the defense has played for the vast majority of the game extremely good football, particularly in the red zone, forcing field goals rather than touchdowns. And they've been able to really stymie some very good offenses, including last week in Kansas City. But the offense has contributed very little and has not spent a lot of time on the field. And it seems like these close losses the Saints have had come at the end of the game, when the defense is just gassed from spending way too much time out there and not being able to get that crucial stop at the end.
Right. You can lay that on either side of the football. Totally agree. The defense has played well, but they have not come up with the play when they could have in Philly, Dallas Goedert, in Kansas City, Juju Smith-Schuster, Atlanta. You know, they have not come up with the play to close out the game. Now, as you said, it's a little unfair to put that on the defense alone, but as a team, you have not been able to close out the last three games. And I say, well, how can you include Kansas City in that game? Because when the Saints scored in the fourth quarter, and had they made the extra point, and it's 16-14, you got a different football game. Mm. But then almost, which has been the MO of late, Tyrann Mathieu falls down, Juju Smith-Schuster gets a 50-yard gain. I mean, it's just in an instant, you went from the momentum being on your side to them being able to score and go back up, you know.
And help over the top. So once the Honey Badger goes to the ground, there's no one there, and, yeah, that blows the game wide open.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was a big, but yet I still feel you had a chance to close out that game when you made it 16-14. The pressure was then on Kansas City, but it wasn't on Kansas City very long because they were able to score so quickly. I mean, so you got a guy falling down in the middle of the field, one of the best players, veteran, you know, played in the stadium. And in Philadelphia, you got a safety running into two guys, takes out three guys. I mean, it's kind of just this weird, perfect storm of things that happens. In the end, it doesn't matter, right? When we're talking about December and January and playoffs and tiebreakers, I mean, these three games, you know, one of them being Kansas City, fortunately, is an AFC game. But I just feel like unless things can get righted pretty quickly, that we're going to be talking about Philly and Atlanta as games they should have won and games that could prevent. We are week six. Let us not get too far ahead, but could prevent, come back to haunt this team. Now, you can play your way out of it. You win your next two games, and, you know, it's a different ballgame because the back end of this schedule is nothing like the front end of this schedule.
You know, if there's ever a must win in week six, I guess this is as close as you get. But interestingly, the line on this game, the odds makers, from the even before they knew if Derek Carr was going to be playing, and even after Spencer Rattler was announced as the starting quarterback, they have kept the Saints as underdogs in this game, regardless of any of that information, and just feel like the Bucs have the advantage no matter who is playing quarterback for the Saints.
Yeah, that was surprising just to me that it started there. You know, I think it was 3.5 or somewhere in that realm, and you just don't see that too often. Saints are 2-3. They're 3-2, so you're not talking about, you know, a great disparity. But to have an NFC South division rival be favorited in your building is jarring. And I think that's probably been mentioned a few times in Metairie at Saints camp, just because you don't like to see that. I don't think that. I mean, I think Tampa's playing better, right? And I don't think Tampa's a better team per se, but from a health standpoint, I mean, in the last 3 weeks, you go back to the Atlanta game, even the Philly and Atlanta game, Atlanta had one guy on their injury list on Wednesday. The Saints had 13. Now that was Caleb McGarry, ended up not playing. But they had, you know, to have the numbers of players that are injured on the Saints team right now, and unfortunately at positions, right, linebacker, offensive line, has been very, very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And not much has changed with the injury report this week. The Saints are still going to be very banged up going into Sunday's game. Mike, we appreciate your spending the time with us. I hope that the odds makers are wrong and many of the predictions are wrong, and that the Saints, with the spark from Spencer Rattler and preparing for this Bucs team, can pull off the upset. Will it be cool enough tomorrow for you to make the gumbo on National Gumbo Day, or are you going to just go and get somebody else's gumbo tomorrow?
No. I feel like next week when the front comes through is a better opportunity. Tomorrow's a little too soon. I'm not mentally prepared. I don't have the ingredients, and so yeah, I'm gonna have to wait till the next cold front.
All right. Well, make sure you get that viscosity right. He's Mike Haas.
Right.
He's the voice of the Saints. He'll be back at 4:00 with Fans in the Pro with Deuce McAllister today, and of course you'll hear him Sunday calling the game right here on WWL with a noon kickoff from the Superdome. Mike, thanks for joining us, and enjoy that gumbo wherever you get it tomorrow.
You bet. You too, my friend.
All right. Mike Haas here on WWL. More of your calls and texts at 504-260-1870 about gumbo, about the Saints, and or about the LSU Tigers, or anything else you want. During the noon hour, I like to open up the buffet to a potluck. You can bring whatever you want to the table, and we'll talk about it. We'll also get the voice of your LSU Tigers up next to preview this top 10 matchup in Death Valley, celebrating 100 years of Tiger Stadium after this. All right, we've been talking about tomorrow being National Gumbo Day for the last 2.5 hours. One person texted us and said, "Dave, I wish you hadn't started talking about gumbo. Now I am so hungry." Somebody else says, "I wonder how a good sausage gumbo would taste with a deviled egg instead of potato salad. I've actually done that, and it's extremely good. It's really the mustardy taste. And then the paprika doesn't hurt, putting that deviled egg in there. It's really good, and I like a potato salad with a whole lot of eggs in it anyway." Somebody else says, "If you have to put potato salad in your gumbo to make it better, you should really consider whether your gumbo is good or not." Now, hole up, swole up, that's not necessarily true. My wife makes the best gumbo ever, and I have my first bowl with rice, and then the second bowl, because I can never eat just one, I use potato salad. It's not because it's a bad gumbo. It's just switch up the flavor and give it a little something different. So them's fighting words, as far as I'm concerned. Tomorrow's not only National Gumbo Day, it's also the first time since 1962 that both LSU and Ole Miss were ranked in the top 10 in a poll and faced each other in Death Valley, and it's the 100th anniversary celebration of Tiger Stadium, so there's a whole lot going on tomorrow. Better have the gumbo ready, but you also better have your game face on. Chris Blair, I know, will have both of those things. He's the voice of your LSU Tigers. Chris, thanks for joining us on this Friday.
Oh, Dave, it's great to join you. And yeah, it's going to be just looking forward to it. I mean, I'm looking outside my window now, just steps from Tiger Stadium. And, you know, tomorrow it's going to be, there's a lot of cars in the parking lot right now, but it's going to be a different look tomorrow. And, you know, as you said, 5 times they've been top 10 opponents in this matchup. They've played 112 times. This is going to be, you know, everything's here. It's homecoming, celebrating the 100 years of Tiger Stadium, and you've got a classic SEC battle between Ole Miss and LSU. And, you know, two high-powered offenses, two teams that think their defense is better than it was a year ago, where in that game in Oxford there wasn't a defense to be found at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. So we'll see. We'll see, but it certainly is going to be an exciting day all day long and into the night and early morning hours here at Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, I know they're saying you're not supposed to set up your tents and your RVs and everything else till 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon there, but I know a few people sneak in early, and with tomorrow being National Gumbo Day, if you're going to the game, you might want to build a little extra time to visit some of the other tailgaters and see if they're sharing their gumbos, because, it would be a great way to bond, if you will, and really so much excitement around this game. And the beginning of a serious gauntlet, 4 of the next 5 games for LSU is against a team in the top 25. So I guess we're really going to find out what these Tigers are made of starting this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough stretch. I mean, really, I guess you could make the argument looking at most of the SEC teams now that have played either 5 or 6 games, Dave, that, you know, the rest of the season is going to be a gauntlet, because it's what it is. I mean, you added 2 more teams, one of which being Texas, one of which being Oklahoma, along with the regular cast of characters that make this league the toughest in the country. And, you know, I think both teams come into the matchup tomorrow. I was asked this morning, are we putting too much emphasis on this game with some big matchups coming up? And no, frankly. I mean, you're trying to get into a 12-team playoff. Obviously, every year at LSU, there is a mission to win the SEC, find yourself in Atlanta in the SEC title game. And, you know, obviously all the talk in the offseason for Ole Miss is this was going to be their year. They went to the portal. They put together this great roster on both offense and defense. And frankly, both teams, you know, LSU dropped the opener to USC in Vegas, albeit not a cupcake and on a neutral field. Ole Miss dropped a head-scratcher to a very good Kentucky defense. So both teams now with 1 loss. And so, yeah, I know it's only week number 6 for LSU, week number 7 for Ole Miss, but I think it's that big a game, because I think the winner come Saturday night still has everything in front of them, whereas the loser probably has to get some help from some other areas.
Yeah, so really this may be a determination for both these teams on if the road to the playoffs is filled with potholes and speed bumps, or if they still have an open path to get to the new 12-game playoff.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you can look at LSU's schedule, and as you pointed out, it's going to be quite the gauntlet moving forward, even after the Ole Miss game. You got to go to Arkansas, who's coming off a huge win, upsetting Tennessee last week at home. Then you got Texas A&M, which a lot of people are jumping on that bandwagon now after maybe a sluggish start. Then you've got Alabama after the second bye week, on the road at Florida. And don't forget about Vanderbilt coming in on the 23rd.
Yeah, they just beat Bama.
That's right. And then Oklahoma. And then, of course, again, it's wild to say that both of these teams have such a must-win game this point of the season, because Ole Miss still has to take on Oklahoma. They have to go to Fayetteville to face Arkansas. They still have the Georgia Bulldogs, Florida, and Mississippi State, obviously, in the Egg Bowl. So, I mean, there are a lot of big games and marquee matchups left for both teams. But, again, that's, I believe, just looking at the numbers, the fact that there are no divisions, a couple of tiebreakers to get in, if we've got a number of teams with similar records just to get into the SEC title game. And then you've got other conferences, certainly three other conferences and, you know, some at-large teams that are going to be, you know, knocking on the playoff committee's door. So that's, again, you hate to say it's a must-win, but I think to keep yourself and give yourself a leg up and to keep all of the things controlled by you, as opposed to, you know, hoping somebody else loses down the road, that's how big this game is.
Yeah, and I think we're going to learn a lot about what this team is made of if Garrett Nussmeier is the man, if we can ride the Nuss bus all the way to the playoffs, and really if this defense is as much improved as at least the defense wants you to believe it is, because other than that first game, we haven't had this kind of test yet for this LSU Tiger team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the storyline or main storyline for me is that a lot of the same names and talented players on offense for Ole Miss are returning. And as I said earlier, it was 55-49, both teams going up and down. LSU, many people may forget, including myself, till I went back and watched the game this week. LSU had a chance to win that late. You know, they hold on to a pass, and you know they come away with outscoring Ole Miss last year. But as it turned out, it was 55-49. So you kind of know what Ole Miss is bringing offensively. You got Lane Kiffin, arguably one of the best play callers in the game. But the talk was this is a much improved Ole Miss defense. And the numbers through six games certainly back that up. They lead the SEC in sacks with 24. They're near the top in tackles for loss. They're holding teams to minimal amount of yards rushing. They're holding teams to just 7.5 points per game. So all the indicators are there that the defense for Ole Miss is better. LSU, on the other hand, as Coach Brian Kelly told me last night on his show, they got a pretty sporty offense too, and their numbers are really impressive. So you feel like, you know, once again, like last year, albeit different style, Garrett Nussmeier and this offense will be able to put points on the board. The crux is what you just said. Is the LSU defense markedly better than they were last year when they went to Oxford? I don't know if we have that answer based on the last four games, even though I certainly thought they looked better and maybe their best performance of the series season was last time against South Alabama. But, you know, as soon as that comes out of your mouth, you realize you're not comparing South Alabama to Ole Miss. But, you know, Coach Kelly, I think, summed it up best last night, you know, and Kentucky gave a little bit of a blueprint. You know, not that LSU is going to go out there and copy exactly what Kentucky does, because LSU is a different team, especially
on the
offensive
side. But the Wildcats did beat the Rebels, so we do have at least a blueprint there. Yeah.
And Coach Kelly said the difference was that Kentucky won on first down. You know, last year LSU couldn't get a third down stop against Ole Miss, but part of that was on first down they were looking at second and one or second and three, and that's when Lane Kiffin licks his chops and goes, okay, we got second short, we're going to go up top, see if we can get it to Trey Harris or one of our other receivers and go for the big play. Kentucky kept them at second and 10, sometimes second and 11, second and 12, which led to third and 9 or third and 10. It kind of took away what Ole Miss likes to do, which is spread the field, run the football, bring you into the box, and then hit you over the top. And to do that, you got to be in rhythm. And to do that, you got to stay ahead of the chain. So Coach Kelly told us last night, don't miss a first down play for LSU defensively, because that's where the game will be won or lost.
Yeah, well, much like I think we'll learn a lot about LSU, and they enter their gauntlet now, and we'll see if this team is as improved as they think and hope they are. The same is true for Ole Miss. They haven't played a top 25 team yet this season, and yet now they've got LSU in the top 25, then Oklahoma in the top 25, and then Georgia after they take on Arkansas, so they also have a bunch of top 25 opponents. When you play in the SEC, though, that's the way it is. We're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of your LSU Tigers. It's going to be a special night in Tiger Stadium. Not that every Saturday night isn't, but this one particularly, we're going to find out from him a little bit more about the celebration of the 100th anniversary of Tiger Stadium when we get back here on WWL. Your calls and texts at 504-260-1870. I'll also find out if Chris Blair has had time to find his favorite gumbo for tomorrow's National Gumbo Day, and we'll see how he enjoys his gumbo, as well as your calls and texts at 504-260-1870. Mashup between two top 25 teams in the AP, two top 10 teams in the coaches poll, as LSU hosts Ole Miss tomorrow night. You'll hear every minute of the action with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, right here on WWL and the LSU Sports Radio Network. Chris, tomorrow is National Gumbo Day, as well as this huge celebration and game in Tiger Stadium. Do you have a favorite gumbo? We've been debating that for the last 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, mine's kind of the seafood gumbo. I mean, give me a little bit of rice, give me some shrimp, maybe some crawfish, and that's, as a matter of fact, I may have some a little earlier ahead of National Gumbo Day. I may actually have some here in about an hour, but if it's got anything out of the ocean, I'm good. Just put it in a roux, put me some rice, and I'll go.
Do you like the whole crab in there? Some people love the crab in there. Some people don't want to stick their hands in it. It's personal preference.
No, throw the crab in there. Throw it all in there. If it comes out of the water, I'm good.
All right. That's Chris Blair's favorite gumbo. Keep texting yours to 504-260-1870, the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We have a couple of callers who want to tell about the favorite gumbo. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. Tomorrow is not only this big matchup between these two great SEC teams, but it's also the official celebration of 100 years, a century of football at Tiger Stadium. Tell us a little bit about how the university is going to mark this occasion.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be just such a significant, you know, I mean, a lot of us were excited coming into the season because it's 100 years. And, you know, I'm blessed that my office literally looks out to Tiger Stadium, and it never ceases to just amaze me that I'm sitting here and get to be a part of it and get to meet so many people, not only here at the university, but just across the state that this incredible pantheon of concrete and steel that has risen out of the bayou over 100 years is such a, you know, significant identifier for the state of Louisiana across not only the country, but the world. You know, that tiger eye at the 50-yard line is as recognizable.
So iconic.
In all of sports, not just college sports. And, you know, to think of the names that, you know, have been out there that have battled over the years, you know, Tittle and Casanova and Doug Morrow and I mean, all the way up to Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and, you know, I mean, the
Jayden
list
Daniels.
Goes on and on and on. Jayden Daniels, I mean, and I'm leaving out hundreds and hundreds of players.
And I'm going to get all the texts of the names you forgot to mention, so we've got that to look forward
to. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's really cool. And, you know, the university certainly has done a great job and have spent a lot of time planning for not only this season, but certainly once the decision was made to celebrate an individual game for the centennial, you know, against Ole Miss. So, you know, you'll see, I think fans, once they're inside this incredible facility, they'll see some subtle changes that signify celebrating 100 years. I think the cool part is the 90,000 LED bracelets that will be on, you know, 90,000 seats inside Tiger Stadium. I'm going to slap them on the wrist, and fans themselves on a stage that will be, again, a focus of college football Saturday night, you know, on television, will be part of the spectacle that will be celebrating 100 years. So it's not as if you're just there as part of the crowd, and then, of course, all the lights of the facility take over. You actually will be part of it, and I'm sure it's going to be
a choreographed light display on your wrist as you sit in the stands. That's pretty cool. You going to have one on in the press box?
I don't know. I asked if mine would actually be able to pick it up, because apparently it's got to be synced with this technology. So I'm going to have one on. I don't know if it'll be able to trigger mine or not.
Well, but it's going to be cool. As long as you pull that little tab out, it should. It should be coordinated with all the other ones. So.
I'm going to give it a shot.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing your call of the game tomorrow night. Let's hope, with everything else we've talked about, that it's also an LSU Tiger victory, and that road we talked to the 12-team playoff remains free and clear as they head down this gauntlet. What's your gut telling you?
You know, I think LSU, again, this will be an offense that, as much as I spouted out all the Ole Miss defensive statistics, you know, they haven't faced an LSU offense yet. They haven't faced an offense that, you know, regularly loves to put 300 and 400 yards up, that has multiple weapons to come at you. And a quarterback who I think has done a sensational job, probably even superseded the lofty expectations that I had for him this year. I just think his decision-making has been just been superb. I think he gets rid of the football, knows where it's supposed to go. And as I said, I mean, he's got so many weapons that I think this is the first time. I mean, look, Ole Miss lost to Kentucky because Kentucky got after them defensively and got them out of rhythm and off schedule. But Kentucky barely won that game because their offense really doesn't have a whole lot to offer. That's why I'm hoping that LSU's offense continues to click and this defense is able to make Ole Miss blink once or twice. Make them blink early, make them blink often, whether that's a turnover or just getting them off the field because they're looking at third and 12 and third and 10 consistently. I think there'll be some points on the board. I just think LSU will certainly test the Ole Miss defense. And I like where the defense has progressed. It's not quite a work that is fully completed, but I like what I see over the last couple of games. And I know this, the defensive guys who were there last year in Oxford, they're putting this as a personal challenge.
They got something to prove, no doubt.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Chris Blair, enjoy that gumbo, whether you have it this afternoon or tomorrow or whenever, and celebrate National Gumbo Day, as well as what a great game tomorrow. Oh, and by the way, there are going to be about 150 former players over the last 8 decades, most of them you didn't mention, so they may be coming up and saying something to you.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and get that list, and maybe before kickoff I'll read the entire 150 names to make sure I didn't leave anybody out.
That might take a little too long, but thanks, Chris. We appreciate you joining us. We know you got a big day ahead, and we're glad we could be a part of your preparation. Enjoy it and have a great call tomorrow. We'll be listening here on LSU.
Thank you, Dave. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. I'm Dave Cohen. Coming up next, we got a couple of callers holding to tell us about their favorite gumbo. Coleman wants to tell us about his, and we'll see what Scoot's got coming up next. Oh, yeah, tomorrow, National Gumbo Day. Coleman, what is your favorite gumbo?
I do prefer chicken and sausage. However, I've never had chicken and sausage without the shrimp.
I like to throw a few shrimp in there as well to my wife's dark brown roux chicken and sausage gumbo.
But what Chris Blair said kind of made me upset when he said he likes the whole chicken. One of the things I don't like is the voodoo stuff that my family puts in. Like, they put the whole chicken bone in there. They put half a crab. They put, like, the bone marrow. I like to eat my gumbo, like, just straight up like a soup. If I have to pick stuff out, it ruins the experience for me.
And you want to be able to identify everything in it. All right, OJ, thanks for calling. What do you like in your gumbo?
I'm going to tell you what. About gumbo is the same way I feel about beer. I have a favorite, but what I really love is a variety. All the different recipes. It'd be a sad world if there was only one gumbo recipe and only one beer out there.
OJ, you make a damn good point. Thank you. Yeah, picking your favorite gumbo to many people is like picking your favorite child. You just don't want to have to do it. Timmy, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. What you think about gumbo?
Oh, if you're talking to me, this is Tommy.
Okay, Tommy, go ahead.
Yeah, gumbo, quickly, my papa from Chauvin, seafood gumbo. My papa from Evangeline Parish, they smoke their meats, chicken and sausage. It's wherever you come from is the best gumbo. And one thing about mayonnaise and the potato salad, when you put potato salad in a gumbo that took 4 hours to make, you're making mayonnaise soup out of it. Keep it separate. Put a little bit of the gumbo. Why ruin the gumbo? You're not going to put ketchup on a steak at Ruth's Chris. That's just my thing. I just got through making a gumbo that took me 4 hours to make.
You don't want anyone ruining it by putting mayonnaise in it. All right, Tommy, I got you. Thanks for calling. We got to run because Scoot's up next. What you got coming up for us, Scoot?
You know, and I'm sure you've talked about this, Dave. You know, gumbo is it's just a word because no two places have the same gumbo.
No.
I mean, it's every gumbo is different. Seafood, chicken, andouille, it's all totally different. And I guess it starts with the roux. Hey, we'll talk about the Saints. We'll talk about the game Sunday. We'll talk about Ole Miss and LSU. And we'll talk a little bit about politics, but it's Free for All Friday. So we will try not to be too serious about anything on the show today.
You know, that's always a challenge, though. No matter what I talk about, someone always wants to turn it into a conversation about Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. And I'm like, that's not what we were talking about, but you got people. That's the only thing that's on their mind.
And do you think it's going to be any different after the election? I don't.
No, I feel like here's one thing I will say. I am so looking forward to November 5th because at least one chapter of the election will be over. But to be honest with you, we've been discussing this election since Donald Trump lost the last election, and now people are going to debate whether or not he really lost. Whatever.
All right, Dave.
Have a great weekend. Go Saints, go Tigers, and stay tuned. Scoot is next.